Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are consuming this broadcast. Welcome to Bus Talk, a podcast about your life at work, where we shred the mumbo jumbo, bring it to its simplest common explanation, address the proverbial elephant in the room, and probably give you something to think. For those joining in new, these conversations could provoke a thought, and if that is something that you like, then you have tuned in to the right show. And for those who are passionate listeners of Bus Talk, Bus Talkers, as I'd like to call you all, thank you so much for joining in every week and being patient with it. As always, every episode is something that has got my attention over the last maybe a week or so, or maybe even more. And so today's episode is no different. I have a topic of microaggressions. If you have been witness to one, or if you have been one of those who had inadvertently, air quotes on that, said something which you later found out was an offensive statement, then this episode could make you rethink, revisit, and probably turn you around. And of course, I'm not going to go into the deep depths of the racial, religious, physical appearances, all those kind of microaggressions. You already have heard about it, you know about it. And so at Bus Talk, we talk about everything that happens at the workplace. And so I will try and have some relevant examples on the typical impact of microaggressions in your everyday work. Of course, this is largely pivoted around sales and business development folks, but not to say this is not applicable to everybody, right? In some sense it is. So take away what you can, discard what you want. That's fair. And on that note, let's jump into today's episode of Bus Talk. Let me set the lay of the land and the reference to context. Microaggressions occur everywhere in various contexts, including the workplace, of course, educational settings, social interactions, everyday encounters at your home or society or in the theater, wherever. While they may seem minor, insignificant on their own, I just asked, were they having a bad hair day? That could trigger someone. It could sound very innocuous and simple, but it might not. But what it does is sometimes perpetuate or compound the psychological impact on that person, because you do not know what that person is feeling on that day. And by your one offensive statement, it kind of triggered a very deep, difficult emotion in their mind. So the cumulative effect of repeated microaggressions have often a profound impact on that individual's mental well-being, self-esteem, confidence, sense of belonging even at the workplace. So addressing microaggressions requires a little bit more sensitivity, awareness. And like I said, it's not a project. It's a way of life to be inclusive, right? So you've heard a lot about on Bus Talk as well, right? There are many episodes on diversity. And I've always maintained that diversity is just not in the gender. It's in the mind. I think you need to be inclusive in the mind to begin with. And being inclusive in the mind is what you believe need not be somebody else's belief system, or somebody else's belief system need not resonate with you, but you still need to coexist. And that's the episode there, right? I mean, that's the gist of the story. That's the bottom of it, that coexisting under one roof towards a common output is what is the need of the hour. With the advent of information age and so much of information and awareness of countercultures, the contradiction with our conditioning is where the challenge is. We've been brought up, and we often heard this from our parents, and I'm sure what I'm about to share right now will resonate with a whole bunch of you guys. parents when see your newborn child and you're saying, use sanitizer, use this, keep this thing clean, da-da-da, and you do all the shebang. And some of the elder generation says, ah, so much of fuss. We didn't bring you up like that. See, you played with mud and you played on the streets and you fell down, you picked yourself up and see, you've grown up just fine. Don't fuss over the child so much. And then clearly the parents of the child get upset that, of course, they're the parents, so they can't say much, but they're upset that that's not how it is now. Things are different. We live in a post-pandemic era and so on and so forth. And so these kind of assumptions, conditioning, often interfere in the harmony of the common household. Likewise, similarly, when you see at the common workplace, especially set of people who've been at the workplace for a very long time, there is a sense of conditioning. This is how it happens. This is how it is here. And so when someone comes up with a new idea, they're often dismissed off as this new kid on the block. Oh, she'll get around or he'll get around. He'll come around. The it'll level set after some months, a few months here and there. The question is, would you want it to be like that? That if the person then also loses all the flavor and excitement and the freshness of the new job and becomes as jaded and doubly quick time. You probably took 5 years to get jaded and the new person gets jaded in 5 months. Is that what you're aiming at? And so sometimes if you're a supervisor or a leader listening to this podcast, think about that. When a new person joins the organization, what are you doing to make them feel inclusive in a way that they can continue some of the best practices from their previous organizations? I've often heard many a times where people have said, oh, reset the counters to zero. Now forget everything that you've learned and known. It's very different here. We are a different, and of course you're a different company, different, but you hired for some of the good things this person had or did in their previous organization. So why would you not allow them to feel comfortable to continue? It'll also challenge the perceptions, the conditioning that some of the existing team members have. So that's a good thing to do. So in today's episode, I am going to talk about this thing called microaggressions. And let's see in various departments or various phases where all of it is applicable, starting which is with hiring. Right. And then we'll go into promotions. We'll talk about office interaction, stakeholder management, upwards, sidewards even, and performance evaluations, and see if you are a party to this, if you are doing it yourself, if you are on the receiving end, what is it that you can do? So sit back, relax, put on your headphones, watch where you're walking. And if you're stuck in traffic, this will be your companion for the next 30 odd minutes. So let's jump right in to this episode of Bus Talk. So hiring can be bifurcated into two parts. Think of the recruiter or the recruitment team, and then the HRBP. And of course, the third part is, of course, the hiring manager. The three parts to this entire bucket, if you will. So let's pick each bucket, each sub-bullet at a time. Hiring, when you make an assumption, and I'm going to state the micro aggression here, make an assumption about a candidate's or job seeker's qualification or abilities based on their demographic characteristics. Even credentialism, if you scroll down, you will find a couple of episodes below. I talk about credentialism and quote unquote, they call it pedigree. If you are from a premier business school, then only, you know, so many job descriptions out there which say people from only IITs, IIMs need apply, as if the rest of the business schools and engineering schools are no good. That's such a discriminatory statement to make, right? Ability is what is more critical. And that's a kind of a microaggressive statement to make, I think. And so making assumptions about a candidate's qualifications or abilities based on their demographic characteristics. Oh, they come from here, so they must be like this. And it's a subconscious trait. Remember, it's more prevalent if you give the example of India, like a north-south divide. And you see that there is this microaggression where, oh, they're more aggressive is the general sentiment for folks in the South. And the general sentiment in the North is, oh, the South Indians are a little more docile. They're very quiet kind of people. Right or wrong, that seems to be the general conversation or sentiment. And both of them are right and wrong in their own ways. Of course, there are very, very aggressive North Indians, but there are very, very docile North Indians, very, very aggressive South Indians and very docile South Indians as well. And both are as good or as bad in... because they're all human beings, they're people, right? As is the case in everywhere else. And I'm sure folks in United States, for example, those in either coasts, those who are more comfortable in a diverse, largely immigrant workforce, have a more inclusive mindset than those who don't. And that is quite a situation there. So those kind of microaggressions happen owing to people's demographics. Where are you, air quotes on this, really from? You know, go back to your country. It's a racial slur we have seen and heard so many times now. The point is, this is the fundamental root problem of this is when we come across people who are not from the same origin, background, don't wear or eat the same way we do or look like the same that we are conditioned to do, that's when the confusion starts. And nobody's really addressed that confusion. Nobody's really addressed that here is when you meet someone who's not like you. I mean, how many parents do that? And if some of your parents go back and think, how many times have you shared this with your child that when you go out into the world, into your nearby world, like a superstore or a market or wherever, if you find someone who is very obese, morbidly obese, you don't laugh at them. Have you done that? Have you ever made, sat them down and said, don't laugh? Have you ever been guilty of laughing if a obese person in front of you trips and falls? No. Chances are you probably would have let out a sniggle, a chuckle and a laughter. It's not something to be laughed about. It's a person's medical condition. You don't know what the problem is. So sometimes we inadvertently, and there are scores and scores of movies which have such blatant disregard for people with challenges is appalling, to say the least. And it's more so in Bollywood that you see people being made fun of because they stammer or they are visually impaired or there is some physical challenges, maybe they're vertically challenged or something like that. You know, there could be many such instances. And so all of this adds to the insensitivity of it all, the discrimination. Therefore, when these people turn up to work and engage with someone who is not like them, that subconsciousness comes in front of you. Like there's this stereotypical classical Indian techie syndrome. What is the classical Indian techie syndrome? The guy will have oiled coconut oil, gelled with coconut oil, hair, rimless specs frame, stubble, white shirt or stripes or check shirt, which is not tucked in, and the hands are, the sleeves are buttoned up. So it's a full sleeve shirt and it's buttoned up, but the shirt is not tucked in. They're wearing a trouser and the highlight, you guessed it, the white sneaker. No matter what the dress code color combination, it is the classical white sneaker. It's a classical stereotypical definition of the Indian techie, especially outside the country. And so sometimes you feel that, and therefore the moment you utter the word that you're going to hire this techie, in their mind they've already conjured up this image of this classical techie. And when someone comes out very suave and normal and very similar to their culture, speaks the language, they're like, they've often asked, have you been in the United States before, or you must have been here for a long time? And when you say, no, I've never been there, they're like, oh, other countries too speak English. Like, yep, they do. And it's happened many a times, right? When, I mean, this, of course, many, many years, probably two, two decades ago, or maybe even more. There have been instances where when folks from the US came down to India, and the flight usually lands up very late in the night, like 2:30 in the morning or 3 in the morning. And then you have folks standing with garlands. And I said, like, might as well have taken the cheetah and the elephant. Why did you leave them behind? I mean, like, why do you need to give them that special treatment? Yeah, they are probably your stakeholders. They will find a cab and go to the hotel. You don't need to be this extra hospitality thing. Safe to say it's not there anymore, or it's probably declined to a significant extent, but it used to be a very big thing back then. Oh my God, folks are coming from the US. And so there's to be a big hue and cry. But when the reverse happened, when some of us went there, that wasn't such a big deal. And we're pretty much on our own at the airport. And to be fair, that's how it should be. I mean, like, what's the big deal? We are at a business. We meet them at office hours and get on with it. Just because you've traveled across the Atlantic or Pacific does not warrant any special attention, either from this end or that end. But anyways, so some of the stereotypes, right? So hiring, back to hiring, you know, we keep digressing because so many related anecdotes and stories, right? So hiring, so making assumptions about candidates' qualifications, abilities based on their demographic characteristics is an absolute no-no. If you're doing it, stop now. Next, using language in the job postings that subtly discourage certain groups from applying. Only those in this area, in this, like, I mean, like, if the person is willing to adjust, travel, accommodate, then why not? And these are such tricky conversations that in some sense, you might argue and say, well, we don't have the budget for you to relocate. And that's the only reason I put it. And so you will defend it, saying that that's a company policy, what can I do? But it also subtly gives out that message that you're not open to diverse set of people coming from different backgrounds. Next, asking inappropriate, irrelevant questions during interviews that may be perceived as discriminatory. Are you going to get married anytime soon? What about kids? What if your husband, have you taken your husband's permission to work? Oh my God, and the list goes on. I know, it is so incredibly frustrating. But here's the tricky part, especially for folks listening to this from outside the country, right? Here's why these questions get asked sometimes in India. Not everybody does it, but there are instances where this happens. And the reason it happens is there have been umpteen cases, and this is a very practical situation, that people do, you know, finish the graduation, engineering, MBA, business school, what have you, get into the job. And within 1 year, or less than 1 year in many instances, get married and stop working completely. And then you did the entire hula hoop, jump around and went to the campus and do a whole bunch of things to attract the talent, give them the best of facilities, train them up and everything goes down the drain. And so people happening once or twice, okay, but if it happens en masse, if it happens regularly, then there's a problem. There's a business problem to be had. So is that a microaggression then to ask that question? Then it's none of your business. Frankly, whether I get married, I have kids, I need permission from my husband, none of your business to ask me any of those questions. People, I would get offended by it. But on the flip side, from a business side, this is what happens. What you do, then you live with it. Right, in the spirit of simplicity in bus talk, how do you then ensure that your business continuity is not impacted without doing any transgressions or microaggressions? So probably a right question to ask would be, do you anticipate any major changes in the coming 2 years that could interfere with your current duties or responsibilities or the work that you're about to undertake? Do you see yourself away from work for an extended period of time? Ask them those questions, and somebody would take them in good faith. And that's where it is today. I mean, they can lie. But no, I don't see. And maybe they're not lying because they could say, well, I didn't know at the time. If I'm going to get married in 8 months' time, I didn't know. And that's a fair call. I mean, you didn't know. So one has to buffer in this cultural situation from absolute practicality that is there in the business. So The microaggressions while hiring have to be curbed because it's more discriminatory towards women than it is towards men. It happens towards men too, make no mistake. But clearly, women are far more at a disadvantage or at the receiving end of these kind of hiring queries than men are. So if you are one, or if you're witnessed one, or if you're party to one, please stop doing that. So recruitment team, the HRBP, of course, very important for you to set the standard and just not do a checkbox activity. So I have to make sure I will penalize someone the moment they say something which is transgressing or it's a microaggression. The idea is to educate them, sensitize them. Maybe, like I said, years of conditioning leads them to say what they do. Years of conditioning, right? Patriarchal conditioning, upbringing, society, environment, movies, everything plays a part. And so to suddenly just do a third penal action might not be the right solution. Educate, coach, of course, give a warning. And then if it is a repeated offense, then you know it's no longer inadvertent. It is somewhat deliberate, and absolutely there should be some action taken. But educating them periodically what is and what isn't, and many organizations do that, sensitize the team of what is microaggression, what is sensitivity, what is inclusivity through L&D programs and everything. But many organizations can't afford an L&D program. So it's incumbent upon the HRBPs. You are the guys who manage. You are the guys, could be an offensive word. What if they're girls? So people is the right word. See, it could be a microaggression in everything that you say. And so it is important that you take care of your people, sensitize them, educate them, including management, not just new hires. Even if a leader comes in, how many times have you had the power as an HRBP to advocate, to advise, to guide the new leader, saying that the culture sensitivities here in this place are like this, these are the cultural norms, here's what we follow as a tradition. Have you been able to have that conversation? And if not, why not? And when will you? Likewise, from the hiring manager, now that the person is going to be part of your team, what are you doing to make sure that their teammates do not have any microaggressions against this person who doesn't look like them, who comes from a different city, region, speaks a different language, has a different religious belief system? What are you doing to make it normal? So focus on the output, outcome, productivity, end result. Let that rule be very clear that anybody's belief system, sexual orientation, how they look, to speak, eat, cannot and never will ever be discussed in a team discussion for anything related to business. That's outside. You do not discuss this at the workplace. So make sure you set the ground rules absolutely accurately and correctly every single time. Cannot make an exception to that rule. Next. So promotions. So once you do, the person does get on board, of course, productivity and work, and once tenure lapses, they know they spend some time, you talk about getting them promoted. So overlooking qualified individuals from underrepresented groups for promotions or opportunities, that is such a bad thing. I was trying to use a more stronger word. But yeah, there have been instances where people are underlooked because of their sexual orientation, for their religious orientations, for sometimes even the way they dress up. You know, there have been instances where I've heard commentary from people where they said, oh, they don't dress like us. It's like, wow, such a leader talking about. They don't, in the sense they were trying to refer as, will this person fit in to the management culture, as it were? And I was like, what kind of a culture is this if the person doesn't have the right to dress the way they want to? Yes, there is an element of decorum. I do not disagree to that. What I mean by decorum is you're in a boardroom, and if you turn up in your innerwear, then that is taking it too far. And therefore, it warrants the argument, can these be ring-fenced? Can an opinion be ring-fenced, post which it becomes a microaggression, is all I'm saying. So is it possible to say, hey, let's maintain the decorum? If the general ask is to be in formals, then be in formals, business formals. If the person turns up in smart casuals or smart or semi-formals, is that acceptable? Define it and then adhere to it. And of course, if the person is absolutely outrageously dressed for that particular occasion, moment, situation, then absolutely, then that should be addressed too. And so it is important to make that distinction, that not to make assumptions. If somebody just, you're in a three-piece suit, but this person is wearing a khaki shirt and a trouser, then they are automatically assumed not fit for the role, for the promotion, or for that position, is absolute nonsense. And so never let a person's output, productivity, intellect, talent get in the way of how they appear. Sure, you've heard, never judge a book by its cover, right? So next, subjecting candidates to higher standards or more scrutiny based on their identity. Oh, you are from a particular community, so let me do this double check. Let me do this even more deeper. Find out extra. You don't never ever do that. Every single person, if you're doing it for one person, do it for everybody. You cannot be discriminatory, right? There is, don't play the role of law enforcement officer. That's not your role. That's for the law enforcement agencies to do that. And if that's the verification, identity, authentication, and everything that you require, then do it for every single soul, including yourself, everybody. So discrimination there is a very big microaggression. Assuming that certain groups are not interested or capable of leadership roles. And this is so much that goes against women here in particular. And should I say, to be more politically correct, like people who identify themselves as women, it is very difficult for them, primarily because of so much of stereotypes. And women are repeatedly asked, either ask these questions or safely assumed, air quotes on that, like, oh, she won't be working beyond this, right? I mean, probably she's good there. I don't think she can handle this, the demands of this job. And people don't discuss it openly enough, which is a progress if you look at it in one space, that while it was so blatant a few decades ago where people would openly talk about it, at least there is some degree of sensitivity and realization that it's a wrong thing to say, that they probably say it under their breath now, which is progress, but it's still not gone away. It's not rooted out. That why would you assume that for a woman? Why would you think that she will not be capable of taking a hard call or a tough decision? That is such a wrong assumption. Ask those who have had, and I've had the fortune and privilege of working with very strong senior women leaders. We have had a brilliant working equation many a times, even if I have disagreed, mind you, just so that you know, it's not that I've agreed with them at many instances and occasions, but it doesn't mean I have not respected them. And that there lies that I would have done the same with if it was, and have done the same if there was a male superior or a supervisor. So I have not discriminated my respect or distinguished my respect of if the person was from a different gender. And likewise, peers, colleagues, juniors, it does not matter what their sexual orientation is, what their gender is, what their gender identity is. It's what you do for the workplace. You can agree to disagree. You can appreciate each other's diversity of thought and then respect each other's boundaries as well. Next, stakeholder relationships. Like I said, treating clients, and you can divide that into internal and external, of course. So treating clients, customers, or partners differently based on their demographic characteristics is a microaggression there. Why would you do that differently? Oh, assuming, and this is some of the biggest microaggressions. It's kind of an oxymoron, right? Biggest microaggression is when people assume that just because they hail from a particular state, area, city, town, that they must be coming off hardships. Well, that might be a possible situation for a particular individual, but it's none of your business to assume any action thereof. You cannot assume that just because they come from this different place, they don't fit here, they don't belong here. Managing stakeholders itself is a difficult process, right? Their expectations, sometimes they don't articulate, and sometimes they over articulate, and then there's no room for maneuvering, both internally and externally. So if you're a person trying to manage customers going out there, they have their own biases, they have their own stereotypical understanding, and again, the discrimination, the microaggression is there. Many times that women face more than men, where customers play extra hard, especially if you're in a negotiation bid, they go extra hard and think, oh, they can win over. How can they lose an argument to a woman? They might have lost billions of arguments to their mothers, to their sisters and daughters. But when it comes to their office environment or their vendors or someone who's selling them something, they get extra aggressive. And if you've been one of them, stop doing that. Respect the person independent of their gender. Look at, and I know in their defense, they will argue, well, I do the same thing with the man. Oh, you haven't seen me how hard I negotiate with men. And because they take pride in reducing costs and, taking out the best deal. And a lot of the people feel a sense of quote unquote alphaness about them that, look, I really squeezed the best deal out of this person. I got the best offer and all that. And they take pride in that. They often transgress decency. They transgress basic courtesy. And they, of course, forget sometimes the business etiquettes that need to remain even while you're negotiating tough. And so women, of course, take more pains in this regard, in the sense they get charged, they get many times they get bullied, they get asked more, almost in some sense, I'm falling short of using the word harassed, but it is little more, especially when there are customers who play very, very difficult for no reason at all. And it's to do with their acceptance that a woman is in control and guiding them to where they want to be. Now, that said, not all customers are like that. Not all men customers are like that. There are women tough customers as well in good measure. I wouldn't call it equal measure, but in good measure. But yeah, microaggression is a microaggression independent of the gender in some sense. So external stakeholders, partners, and then internal stakeholders and partners have the same thing. There are fortunately that many more checks and balances in most organizations these days to neutralize this, to balance it out. But the deep-rooted belief system is sometimes that always comes out under pressure when you are under, when your back is against the wall and it just erupts out. And so people just make insensitive comments or jokes. Typical assumptions. And if you're part of those office WhatsApp groups, you will have sexist jokes and everything. And you probably chuckle and hey, it's just a joke. It's so wired up and stuff like that. But all of these small micro activities lead to microaggressions at the workplace. It subconsciously fill up your perception bucket in the mind, your belief bucket in the mind, and replenish and refurbish and reinforce the belief that you're picking up from all the activities and things that happen around you, right? And so very important to steer clear, exit the group. You don't want to be part of sexist jokes. You don't want to be part of stuff that propagates this discrimination, because it will reflect at other places once you accept in one place. Okay, let's switch gears to the next point. Office interactions. It's an extension of the previous point, of course. The office interactions, when it's a classical thing, right? Interruptions. Women get interrupted even before they can. No. Hold on. Let me explain this to you. Mansplaining. mansplaining a lot. They just don't allow them to finish. They interrupt, interject, and override conversation. They kind of almost trying to make, say, oh, well, I know better, is the tone of their conversation, irrespective of the baritone or the lack of it. And not just interrupting from a gender standpoint, even there are instances of interrupting marginalized groups during meetings or discussion. Oh, what will you know? Or how would you know? And that kind of stuff. They have made insinuating comments and remarks, which come out as a result of their perceptions and belief of their background. And so they must be like this, and how would they know what, you know? And so it's slightly, it is very uncomfortable for the people in the room who do not subscribe to this. And if you have a party to that, you should definitely object, stop, address. And if you are being targeted as a within the organization, if you are subjected to a negative perception, then exit that organization who does not respect the basic human equality or the premise of basic human quality, that you have to respect people no matter what their backgrounds are, where they come from. If they don't have those basic standards, is all I'm saying, that don't be part of that such group. And I know it's, some of you will say it's easier said than done. I don't have a choice. I don't have alternatives and options. And yeah, in that case, stay put. Of course, it is difficult, but see if you can make a small change. Can you make a small change with the people? Not all people in the organization will be like this, right? Can you make a small change? Keep working at it. If you don't have an alternative, you can't move out, can't suddenly chuck your job and say, here's my resignation, I don't want to do all that stuff. You can't do that. Try and make a change within the small group that you have. Talk about it, discuss about it, and see little by little, because sometimes it's not like this instant gratification that will happen, overnight change that will happen, right? So try, but not doing anything about it is a bad idea. Dismissing or minimizing contributions or ideas of individuals from underrepresented backgrounds, making insensitive comments or jokes that reinforce stereotypes or marginalize certain groups. You know, people have, you know, time immemorial made jokes about communities, right? The Sardarji is always to be this bold and, out there extrovertish kind, as if subtle, intelligent, well, Sardarjis don't exist. Just for, in case you are living in some other planet, the success that India sees today is largely credited to Dr. Manmohan Singh. And if you don't know who that is, then it's sad on you. But some of the most smartest, suave Sardarjis, as is the case with any community, to have this classical, and this is probably propagated by the movie industry, that whenever you show a Sardarji, then this person will be loud, boisterous, and as if there is no subtle, quiet, and the nuanced Sardarji. That is not true at all. As the case with Bengalis, classically, the classical representation is that they're having pan chewing and oil in the hair. And like I mentioned about the classical techie down south and the money making Guju in the west. Gujarati people from Gujarat are called as Gujus. So these are stereotypes which have been propagated for a very long time in the movies, and see how they creep in to the common workplace, right? In your everyday boardroom, in your team meetings, that you must be like this, or you, what would you know? You are like this. You come from that community, or you that religion, and stuff like that. So, if your boss is doing that, please report it. If you are doing it, please stop it. If you know somebody's getting hurt, stand by them and help them, and sensitize the rest of the group to be a little more inclusive, and educate them that this is not how it is being received. What you think is an innocuous, simple, oh, what's the big deal kind of a statement is landing very difficultly with other people, and they might not be able to say it. Then you need to be their spokesperson and highlight their plight. Last, performance evaluation. Oh my God, the biases that that exist because of preconceived notions. Rating employees from underrepresented groups lower than their peers for similar performances, or be it holding individuals to different standards. Oh, you're from my community. Let me make sure we are a group and we progress as a group. And expectations based on their identity. Of course, providing less constructive feedback for or development opportunities to certain section of the employees. All these are microaggressions that we see at the workplace. Very difficult. These are so entwined, entrenched, and it could be reinterpreted, misinterpreted, misconstrued, or re-represented in so many different ways that almost always there is a counter argument to it. And people say, well, deal with it. This is the data. And this is, you have to survive. This is what it is. We, of the 100 employees in the company, 90 of them are from a particular community or subsect or religion, speak the same dialect. And if the 10 of them are from different, they can look for another job. Nobody stops them. But that's kind of defeats the whole purpose, isn't it? That you are searching for talent, not their religion or their community or their background or their sexual orientation or their belief systems. You're searching for their output. If those 10 people, you've hired them for their output and output alone, that's what should matter. Nothing else should matter. I know this is a very big topic, huge topic, and there's so much more to discuss, but at the workplace, I would love to hear some of your thoughts. Hop over to www.bustalk.in. That's BASTALK.IN. Go over to bustalk.in. Leave a comment. Reach me on LinkedIn if you want to. That's IN/IronPan. Or on X, which is Ionisms, hashtag Ionisms, AAYANISMS. I hope this episode, like all other episodes, made you think a little bit, rethink. And you don't need to acknowledge it to me, to anyone. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though. If you've made a difference to someone's life or in your organization, leave me a comment. And if you're so kind, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. But if you haven't in so far, there's never a better time to start than now. Not tomorrow, not today, like now. So if you need ideas, let me know. I'm happy to redirect you to people who can share neutral, positive reinforcements, ideas on how to neutralize microaggressions within yourself. You can read about it. There are lots of proper documentation all around the internet, and the right ones are there if you really want to read them. On that note, that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you for being patient. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you've reached your destination. I hope I was good company. This content was good company more than me. And I hope you champion the cause of inclusivity as a way of life and not as a project. Because at the base connection, we are all human beings. Nobody, and there's no greater truth than that. And as much as our conditioning and belief systems might bring us to a point, it's our maturity and evolution that takes us to the next level. On that note, stay well, stay inclusive, keep listening to Bus Talk.